It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Across the world, thousands of species of insects contribute to people's diets. Some are delicacies, and we discuss insects as protein and whether you're on board. Call in with questions and comments on eating bugs, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have May Walraven, general manager of biotech firm InnovaFeed North America, based in France. This is an insect producer for animal and plant nutrition with construction of a black soldier fly production facility underway in Decatur, Illinois. May, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, Kate. Thank you for having me.
We also have Valerie Stoll with us, a UW-Madison faculty associate and research scientist, president of MIT, which stands for Mission to Improve Global Health Through Innovation. Valerie, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited we're covering this topic.
Yes, indeed. And Valerie, let's dig in right away. You've studied the consumption of insects in Zambia and other countries. Is there more of an appeal for bugs in other parts of the world compared to eating them here in the States?
Well, certainly. I mean, food culture runs deep, and we are all most prone to like and eat the things we grew up eating. And insects are a part of traditional cuisines and diets around the world. About 2 billion people live in places where insects are consumed by at least some group of the population. And that's just not the case in American cuisine, but I do think trends can change, and trends can change quickly. And as our other guest knows, insects may really enter the American diet through the feed avenue, but they are certainly an important part of the diet across the globe. And if we're having an adverse response, it's just a bias that we have based on what we're used to.
I do want to just probe a little bit more here, because you mentioned, you know, how much food has such a role in cultural and social identity. I think of the all-American hot dog, for instance, goes with, you know, baseball and cookouts and apple pie. You know, what associations do you think that we make with insects here in the West?
Yeah, I certainly think there's this ick factor that a lot of Americans in particular have when it comes to thinking about insects as food. And part of that is justified. I mean, we know that some insects are vectors of disease and they do appear on things that are rotting or infected. But in reality, the majority of insects and thousands of species that are known to be edible and have been documented are totally healthy and beneficial for people to be eating. But we do have to overcome that initial response that we may have. But if you think about food traditions, I mean, I didn't grow up eating frog legs, so that disgusts me. For some people, a lobster is also not very appealing. But for others, it's a delicacy and something that you absolutely want on your plate. So part of it is exposure, you know, just being exposed to more food types and insects and learning to think about them differently, which takes time and experience.
And May, your company, InnovaFeed, based in Paris, is building this insect production facility in Illinois. Marketing for black soldier fly is fisheries and aquaculture. Is that a better avenue for you rather than human consumption? Why operate in the U.S.?
So the reason we're operating in the U.S. is because there's a lot of byproducts from the agricultural industry which we can use to feed our insects. And for us, the whole purpose of growing insects and reinserting them into food chains is because they're kind of nature's super upcycler. And so we can use a lot of byproducts that are considered waste and feed our insects to then generate very high quality nutrients, so very high quality protein, but also natural oils, and then feed them to animals, into aquaculture, into swine, poultry, livestock, and create a more sustainable food chain for tomorrow. So for us, the US is very interesting from a production perspective. And then we think we'll be addressing a global market when it comes to animal nutrition, because we will be facing protein deficiencies in the future. The FAO has announced that by 2050, we'll be facing a 30 to 40 million protein deficiency. So these are the challenges that we're trying to tackle.
I wonder, in these animal feed products, May, is the insect protein supplementing other protein in the products, or is it replacing or taking the place of another protein that was found in the products?
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
If we take the example of aquaculture, for instance, we feed salmon, we feed shrimp with insect protein, and you could say that we're replacing fish meal, which is basically fish powder. They use wild caught fish, so a lot of small fish that are caught off the coast of Peru, of Chile, and then they use that fish to feed larger fish that we like to see on our table. The problem with that is that the fisheries at this stage are pretty much emptying the oceans of the smaller fish, and hence you see entire ecosystems that are collapsing. So with insect protein, we can replace that marine resource and avoid a lot of those that impact from fisheries. However, if you look at the growth of aquaculture today, it's growing at a 6 to 7% rate globally. And so really, at the moment, we're more sponsoring the growth than fully replacing fish meal. But we know we'll always need some part of fish meal. So it's a way to protect marine resources in the future as we need to produce more food for a growing population.
May Walraven with us, General Manager of InnovaFeed North America. We have Valerie Stull with us as President of the Mission to Improve Global Health Through Innovation, talking about insects as food for people, animals, in aquaculture. You can join along the way here, 800-642-1234. Jeanette calling from Warren, Illinois. Hi, Jeanette. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I'd just like to let folks know that we go after the invasive Japanese beetles that are on our plants. They're not the ones that look like ladybugs. They're the ones that are shiny, burgundy, with five white spots on their abdomen. And since their natural response to us trying to catch them is to fall off the grapes or the raspberries, we take a simple funnel and a Gatorade bottle or something like that, hold that underneath and tap the leaves. The insects fall into those. And we will either pop them into the refrigerator for a little while to slow them down or stun them. And then when we want to make use of them, we take them out, shake the bottle as we're headed there. The rattling sound of the insects that are still quite alive, but slower, attracts our chickens. And we've got about 10 hens. Our chickens come running because they know that they're getting a treat. Just like some of the garden scraps, they come running. And since they're 40% protein, we're getting rid of an invasive pest. And our chickens are getting some extra food that they love.
Oh, Jeanette, thank you for walking us through this life cycle of what you do there. I want both of you, May and Valerie, here to comment on that. Valerie, you first.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love these stories and these anecdotes of how people are thinking about insects differently. And insects are a natural part of a chicken's diet. So I'm not surprised that your chickens are very excited about that. And it's pretty innovative that you were able to collect them in that way. I will say that Japanese beetles and many beetles are also edible, and in other parts of the world, people do consume them or the larvae of the beetles as a really great source of protein and fatty acids. So it's great to see them used here for chickens. That's fantastic.
May, what are your insights on the Japanese beetle as chicken treats?
Well, I think, thank you, Jeanette, for this this story, because I think it illustrates so perfectly how insects introduce circularity. So you're taking basically what was a problem with the invasive Japanese beetle species and turning it into a solution where you're bringing treats to your chicken. So I think it's such a perfect way to illustrate why insects have a pivotal role in the food chain and why it makes sense to reintroduce them into our own food chains. And it is such a natural source of incredible nutrients that at the moment we're kind of bypassing into our diets, and you see it from the chickens' reaction. They love it.
May Walraven is with a biotech insect producer that's building an insect protein farm in Illinois. Valerie Stull is a UW-Madison research scientist studying the impacts of eating and farming insects across the world. Call in with your questions and comments about insect agriculture, raising bugs for people to eat in particular, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the global market for insect protein and the effects on sustainable food systems. Call in with your questions and comments about healthy bugs to eat, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. May Walraven is here with the insect protein biotech firm InnovaFeed North America, and Valerie Stull, president of the research collaborative MITEI that works on issues related to nutritional and environmental benefits of insect consumption. Let's take another call. Tom in Burlington. Hi, Tom. What would you like to bring up?
I recently discovered that you are supposed to have older people need 80 grams of protein a day plus exercise to keep your muscle mass from deteriorating and to keep from falling.
Take another call, Tom.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I hear an echo in the background. Valerie, I'm wondering, I think I hear what Tom is getting at, that, you know, as older people are needing more protein, can insect protein help in that respect?
Absolutely. I mean, insects are an exceptional source of bioavailable protein, meaning that it's protein that your body can easily digest. It's comparable to protein from other animal sources like beef or eggs or chicken. If you use a dried or powdered cricket protein powder, for example, you can get about 13 grams of protein in just 2 tablespoons, which you could add to your bread or your smoothies in the morning. And it's going to have all the essential amino acids that you need for human nutrition, those that you have to get in your diet and your body can't synthesize. So insect protein is a really great option for supplementing protein or supplanting other sources of protein in the diet, particularly because of its nutritional quality as well as the environmental benefits that we've been talking about in terms of insects being a great recycling mechanism in our food system. And also, they simply are more efficient at converting food into feed than conventional animal sources, and they emit fewer greenhouse gases in the process of being farmed.
Can you talk a bit more about the uptake there on things like in the form of powder or in the form of protein bars or cricket flour, for instance?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a number of new companies across North America and the world, Europe and Asia, that are producing insect-based food products. So one that's become kind of popular is the cricket powders. So essentially a cricket flour or a high protein powder that you could put into anything that you're baking or a smoothie. You use it the same way you would use soy powder or soy protein or whey protein. And that's a really easy way to integrate insects into the diet if you're a little bit squeamish about facing the insect. And we in this field kind of joke that crickets are the gateway bug instead of the gateway drug.
Yeah.
Because they're an insect we're familiar with. We aren't as disgusted by them as we may be some other insects. We're comfortable with the idea of eating them as opposed to, you know, a ladybug that we might really love in a different way. So they help people, you know, get exposed to insects. And the powder, you know, I got my 7-year-old mom to eat muffins with cricket powder in it. It took a couple years to talk her into it, but now she's an avid consumer. And so that's a really easy way, you know, if you're not comfortable eating whole insects and facing the insect. But I will say that, you know, fresh insects prepared in culturally traditional ways are delicious. You know, there's these grasshoppers in Mexico called chapulines that are spiced, and you often can eat them warm, and they're kind of a street food with a chili lime flavor, and they're really good. here in the US, we mostly have access to dried insects. And it's really the difference between beef jerky and a steak sirloin. You know, like a dried product is really quite different. So I always encourage people that when they travel to a place where there is a strong culture of eating insects to try those traditional dishes, because it's just a really different experience. Kate, but I do want to mention that we have a fantastic event happening at UW-Madison this weekend called Swarm to Table.
Yes.
I don't know if you're going to bring it up.
I was going to say, we're going to get there in a moment. Okay. Let's put a pin in it. I just want to get back to May here for a moment. I mean, we're talking here about crickets being a gateway. What insects have you explored eating, and what was your reaction, May?
So we have focused on growing at one specific species of insect, which is called the black soldier fly. And we picked this species both for its nutritional profile, so very rich in protein, but also very balanced protein profile. And also it has a lot of micronutrients that have health benefits that are antioxidant and antimicrobial. But we also picked it because it was very efficient to produce this specific species, more so, for instance, than crickets. I completely agree with Valerie on the gateway insect, because we are more familiar with crickets. But if we think of the future, there might be other species that are more efficient and sustainable to produce. So we've been using this black soldier fly for 6 years now and producing it at a very large scale. And we've tried it in several recipes. So we focused on three applications: protein bar, falafels, and snacks. And I liked the comment from Tom around how can we use it as a supplement, because I think in the United States, people have a very good education on nutritional food value. And so they think about calories, they think about what the food is going to bring to them. And I think this will be a great way to introduce insect into people's diets, because you won't only look at it from a taste perspective, but also what is this additional ingredient going to bring to me in terms of health, in terms of nutritional value. And so that's something we're working on as we build different recipes, including insect, which is, first of all, it needs to taste delicious, because no one wants to eat something yucky. But also, how do you make it kind of a superfood?
Can you go into a little bit further, May, as you produce black soldier flies, how is that process? How do you produce and harvest them? Can you give us some insight?
Absolutely. So as I said, we use byproduct of the agricultural industry. So here in the US, we'll use byproducts from the corn industry, and we co-locate our facilities with large corn mills. So in Decatur, we're partnering with ADM and using the byproducts from their process. These are completely natural products, but they will usually be considered as a waste stream. And so we can upcycle that waste stream. Our larvae feed on this feedstock for about a week. So it's a very short life cycle. And in that time span, they grow very fast, from, if you take the human equivalent, the size of a newborn to the size of a blue whale. So that's how fast they grow.
Wow.
And after a week, we'll harvest them, and our process is fully mechanical. So what we do is we dry them, and then we separate the protein part from the oil part, and we sell those as two separate ingredients that can go into different recipes, either for animal nutrition or for human nutrition. So it's a very short cycle and a very natural one. The challenge is really being able to do it at a very large scale if we want to have an impact on the environment and be able to become a mainstream ingredient.
Valerie, how might harvests work in other parts of the world?
Yeah, so about 92% or more of insects consumed by people around the world are collected from the wild. So people are foraging them and wild harvesting. And I've seen really innovative ways to do this. If you're collecting flying termites, for example, in Africa below the Sahara, you might hold up a light at night and the insects will swarm to your light and hit it and then fall into a bucket of water that you have set up. So you're collecting them in buckets of water overnight. With caterpillars, people are collecting them from trees by hand and then processing them and often sun drying them or roasting them in dry ash. And they're typically available during certain seasons. So you'll have seasons of abundance in terms of the collection and harvesting of wild insects around the world. But I do want to note that there is certainly in small-scale insect farming for human consumption around the world as well. In Thailand, I think there's more than 20,000 cricket farmers who do small-scale cricket farming for sale into local food markets for human consumption, kind of using very rudimentary farming equipment, buckets, bins built from wood or plastic or concrete, and kind of farming them also with short life cycles the way, not a black soldier fly, but short life cycles and, you know, innovative mechanisms for farming and collecting them.
Valerie Stull with us, May Walraven, as we explore insect-based protein with you, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine global food trends with alternative proteins and developments in insect-based foods. And your take on a diet rich in edible insects. Are we headed there? Call in with questions and comments about insect farming and insect edibles, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. May Walraven is general manager of InnovaFeed North America. That's a French insect protein company. And Valerie Stull here leads Mission to Improve Global Health Through Innovation, or MITI. It's a research hub investigating edible bugs in sustainable food systems. Let's bring in Nancy now in Milwaukee. Nancy, what would you like to bring up?
I drink a lot of whey protein powder and pea plant protein powder and milk at least once a day. The cost is about $16 for a 2-pound container of this powder. And I'm wondering how the insect powders compare in price. And I'm also wondering if we can just trap earthworms in our own backyards, for instance, clean them with running water and roast them on a cookie sheet in our ovens and grind them up. Is this something that the individual can do?
Oh, Nancy, great questions. I'm going to have Valerie field first here on cost and then some home recipes. Valerie.
Sure. Thanks for that question, Nancy. It's great to hear you're focused on getting protein in your diet and you're using those whey and pea protein sources. Unfortunately, because the industry is pretty new here in North America for producing edible insect powders and protein powders, the cost is a bit higher. You know, it's $20 to $40 per pound for a pound of cricket protein at the moment. So it's more than those whey and pea proteins. But I do anticipate that the cost will go down as competition in the industry increases. And as May's work shows, that using this upcycling technique of feeding insects, you know, agricultural waste and other waste streams is one way that we can also reduce the cost in the future. So I do anticipate that the cost will go down and be competitive in the future. So earthworms are actually annelids, not insects, but they are part of the diet in other parts of the world. So I can say that there are people eating earthworms of various varieties in other contexts. If people are interested in kind of wild foraging their own insects or finding them in the environment, I would just recommend that you make sure that anything you collect is nowhere near anyone spraying any pesticides or any major contaminants that could, you know, be unhealthy for you to consume. Also, kind of learn a little bit about the insects that you would be looking for. Avoid those that would probably be feeding on blood or other kind of unclean things. I would recommend thinking about, in the Wisconsin context, kind of crickets and grasshoppers as a good place to start, maybe some beetles. And then there's lots of ways to cook and prepare them. Washing, freezing, roasting, drying them are all great options. My main recommendation is to treat insects just like any other animal product. So you want to make sure you clean it and cook it thoroughly before you consume it. And then one other note, just avoid insects that are really brightly colored, because sometimes that's a sign of a toxin. The insect is warning you and other things in the environment not to eat it. But there's some good resources online for looking up edible insects in your area. And then, of course, you can support the businesses that are selling insect powders. There's a Canadian company called Entomo Farms. Aspire Food Group. There's a company in Minneapolis called Three Cricketeers that produces edible cricket powder that you can purchase as well.
Valerie, such great information. Thank you so much. Nancy, thanks for the question. May, I want to turn to the economics of insect protein here, because last year your company, InnovaFeed, raised $250 million in capital, some of that money paying for the construction of this new production facility in Illinois. How are investors seeing the global potential of insects as an industry?
Yes, so I think Nancy's question is right on point, because we will not create a new sustainable source of protein if it cannot be competitive with plant protein or more conventional animal protein sources. So being able to have a competitive price on the market is absolutely critical. And the only way to do that is really through scale, which is why we're targeting very large facilities producing, tens to hundreds of thousands of tons of protein per year from insects. And so the investors see the ambition that we have as creating a whole new industry and not just creating a small kind of niche sector. And so they see it as a great opportunity to scale. And so that's really what we're going after. And so we have the opportunity to have a completely blank page where we can design our process, which is why we're looking at innovative ways to source raw material through waste stream, but also how do we source energy? So by co-locating our plants next to existing facilities, we can reuse some of the waste energy in the form of hot water or steam to heat our facilities, because our insects like it to be nice and warm. And so we're thinking of innovative ways to make it both the most sustainable production model possible, but also the most economic and competitive model. And so the question that Nancy asked is right on point.
And so as you collaborate with the multinational agricultural corporation, Archer Daniels Midland, those black soldier flies will be fed corn silage. And that is a shift from the wheat byproducts your flies eat in France. Is there a nutritional difference between the flies that eat corn or wheat?
So we've tested about 100 types of different feedstock around the world, including wheat, corn, banana peels, palm oil byproducts, and it has a very little impact on the resulting products. So if you think about humans, it's not because we eat only carrots that we will turn into a carrot. We do need to keep a balance in what we feed them. So we do supplement it with some other ingredients. But really what we're looking at is being able to have access to very large quantities of that feedstock that is considered kind of lower value biomass and does not have a current output. We also need to make sure that it then meets the quality need for our insects' diets. But we've identified wheat as being a great source of feedstock in Europe, corn in the US, and in the future, palm oil in Southeast Asia is also a very interesting source of feedstock. However, we are launching an innovation center at the moment in Illinois so that we can make sure we test all the implication of changing the source of feedstock for our insects.
Talking about insects as food for people, for animals, aquaculture as well. May Walraven, General Manager of InnovaFeed North America. Valerie Stull is here, President of the Mission to Improve Global Health Through Innovation. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Follow-up question here, Valerie, from Arlene in Burlington. Call to ask, if Japanese beetles are edible for us, and is eating them a way to get rid of an invasive pest, Arlene asks.
Yeah, I believe the evidence shows that they are edible. And as the previous caller demonstrated, you know, collecting them from your own yard is certainly possible. I think that eating them or feeding them to your chickens are a great alternative to just spraying to kill them or other efforts to kill them. In terms of scale of impact, you know, it really depends on how much land and how much you can collect at one time. But an interesting component of insects that we haven't talked about is that while they provide exceptional protein, they also have dietary fiber, which comes in the form of chitin, which is in that exoskeleton of the insect. So they're an interesting dietary supplement, not just for the protein, but also this unique fiber source that could be good for gut health. And there's some new research I've been involved in, a little research looking at that. So I think the potential to kind of rethink about how we deal with pests is certainly on the table. And it's something I've worked with African farmers on as well, thinking about trapping locusts and grasshoppers that are decimating their crops instead of spraying and using, you know, bait traps to collect them in mass. So it's a really good question.
You've published research as well, how eating insects can improve global nutrition, specifically, as you mentioned, Africa and Asia. How is insect eating more environmentally sustainable than raising livestock and animal consumption in Africa and Asia?
Well, certainly I don't want to suggest that, you know, beef or other livestock or other animals aren't important for the diet or ecosystems or farming systems, because, of course, cattle provide manure, which is really important for agriculture as well. But in terms of scaling up production and actually farming insects, they do require less land, less feed, less water, and emit fewer greenhouse gases than conventional livestock. This is partly because they're cold-blooded, you know, they're ectotherms, and so they don't expend energy or waste calories regulating their body temperature. And they're also really just efficient at converting food into body mass. They have a really high reproductive capacity. They can be reared often in tight confined spaces, so you don't need as much land. So in terms of efficiency, there's a lot of potential. And this is the stuff that InnovaFeed is looking at right now, is how to optimize production at larger scales. And in places where insects are already a traditional part of the diet, but often seasonally collected and collected by hand, I think farming them has huge potential to be an environmentally friendly an alternative source of protein as compared to livestock, which just require a lot more resources.
May, we heard from Judy in Milwaukee. Call to ask, are you looking at the environmental footprint of growing corn to feed insects as opposed to wheat? Because corn is soil depleting, Judy points out, and wheat would be more environmentally friendly. What do you think of that?
So we tried to have a very quantitative approach to understanding our environmental impact. And what we do is every 2 years we run a life cycle assessment. Life cycle assessment enables to look at our products' impact both across the value chain, but also across a wide variety of impacts. So we'll look at climate change, but we'll also look at biodiversity, water quality. And I think there's something like 25 categories of impact. So yes, we'll be looking at the impact that corn versus wheat might have. And there are many things when you change location that will vary. So the source of energy that we're using as well. So we try to have a very comprehensive picture of our environmental impact and take all the factors that go into that footprint into account. And I think that's something that requires partnering upstream and downstream with the different actors of the value chain to better understand their impact and how it impacts you. So that's something that we've started doing in 2020, and that is kind of an ongoing work at InnovaFeed.
May Walraven, general manager of a French insect protein biotech firm. We have Valerie Stull here, UW-Madison faculty associate and research scientist at the intersection of edible bugs and nutrition of global health. Join in with questions, comments about bugs as a food staple to promote human health. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We look at implications of insect farming as thousands of insect species are identified as edible. Valerie Stull is here, president of the Mission to Improve Global Health Through Innovation, or MITEI, working on this issue. May Walraven is with insect-based protein firm InnovaFeed North America. Valerie, let's turn to the Swarm to Table. Both of you will be speaking Saturday at the third Swarm to Table event on the UW-Madison campus. What is this meant to accomplish, Valerie?
Yeah, I'm so glad we're getting a chance to talk about this. So Swarm to Table is a celebration of insects in food, art, and culture. And I helped put on the first one in 2019 with a student of mine, Martin Ventura, and then COVID hit, of course. And so in 2022, the Undergraduate Entomology Society stepped in along with Slow Food UW to take over the event and put one on last year, which was phenomenal. And this year is going to be even better. The event is going to be include an expo space featuring, you know, insect agriculture industry players, including InnovaFeed and others, as well as interactive activities for attendees and an opportunity for people to learn about insects as food, as feed, and the importance that insects play in our culture and lives. I should note that there will also be a gourmet insect tasting menu put together. Local
well,
chef.
Well, now you're talking. You buried the lead there.
Yeah, absolutely. And last year, the menu was phenomenal. We had a mealworm tempeh dish. We had some scorpion crackers. It was delicious. I don't even know what's on the menu this year. I haven't seen the final menu, but it's going to be a really creative and delicious opportunity to try insects that are not as easily available for most people and in ways that people certainly have never eaten them.
May, what is the message you want to convey at this event?
Well, I think creating awareness of how insects can be a part of tomorrow's sustainable food chains is really important. I'm very grateful for the invitation and excited to meet all the people that are working on pushing the industry forward, especially excited about meeting some of the students. I feel like they always bring a lot of energy and great new ideas to the table. And I think, you know, insects can also bring a lot of purpose for a lot of young people that are looking for ways to make the world a more sustainable place. And so I think these kind of events are really important to kind of bring that energy together and share it.
And bring that awareness. Let's bring in Charles in Stevens Point. Hi, Charles.
Hi. A quick question about practicality. I don't have a problem with the ick factor, but I'm wondering, say somebody wanted to replace 25% of their daily protein needs from animals and replace it with insects, from say mammalian protein to insect protein. How many grasshoppers would one have to eat if they wanted to get 25% of their protein, daily protein needs over the course of the year? How practical is it?
Charles, great question. Valerie.
Yeah, that is a really great question. And it's a very difficult one to answer because of course, every insect is slightly different. Every species is different in terms of size and nutritional content, and it may change a little bit depending on how an insect was reared. But I will say that in other parts of the world, people most certainly do get a significant percent of their dietary protein needs from insects, particularly during the seasons when those insects are available. But if you wanted to start to replace, you know, some of your other meat sources or protein sources with insects, you could not only buy some protein powder and start integrating that into your diet, but you could actually start an insect farm at your home. You know, I've lived in a one-bedroom apartment previous to now in Madison for a long time and was farming mealworms under my kitchen sink using kitchen scraps, kind of as a home compost. And then I was, you know, kind of roasting them and adding them to salads. I do think that it's a growing industry. So it would be, you know, short-sighted of me to suggest that that would be a really easy thing to do if you lived in the US, you know, overnight. But I do think with time and attention, insects will become more part of our diets and can supplant other protein sources. Or you could, you know, invest in buying products chicken or fish that have been reared using insect-based feeds as a way to reduce your impact, your environmental impact. So if you're thinking about climate change in your diet, I think that insects are a great supplement or way to replace some of the impact of other meat-based products. But a direct calculation is very difficult to do depending on the species and your needs, et cetera.
Charles, thanks for the call. We heard from Sherry in Soldiers Grove. Sherry has an infestation of red ladybug lookalikes, Sherry says, can't get their chickens to eat them as is, and wonders, is there some way that Sherry can process them to get chickens to eat them? Any ideas, either of you?
So I think they're about 2 million species of mammal and something like, you know, tens of millions of species of insects. So it's really hard. It's, if you were asking, I have an elephant in my garden, how do I shoo him out of my garden? I'm sorry, I don't have an answer for Sherry.
Oh, dear. That's okay. I do want to turn to pet food here for a moment, May, because insects are increasingly an ingredient in pet food. What do you see on the horizon there?
Sure. So we actually have a partnership with ADM here in the U.S. to commercialize insect protein for pet food. We see it as a very high quality of protein because it's natural. It's got those neat health effects. And we see a lot of people who want to start feeding their animals like they would feed themselves and that are more conscious about both the quality of the nutrients they're feeding their animals, but also the impact that it will have on the environment. So in Europe, we've seen a very strong pickup over the last year of insect ingredients in the pet food industry. And we think over the next year or two, we'll see a similar phenomenon here in the US. The legislation has just changed last year for dogs, and it's still pending for cats. But we're very hopeful that that will happen very quickly in the next couple of years.
Valerie, we're almost out of time. What do you have your eye on as insects, as protein spreads across the globe?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited about the work in the feed space to kind of really reduce environmental impacts of feeding other animals, particularly chickens and fish, which are, you know, more efficient at converting food into body mass than some other animals. And I'm really excited about all the work that some chefs are doing to innovate in the space. You know, it doesn't matter if insects are a climate smart food alternative if they don't taste in a way that people want to eat them, right?
We have to make them appealing.
Yes. And appealing.
Oh,
and so Chef Andy Jack, who'll be at Swarm to Table, is doing a lot of that work, and it's exciting.
Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for the invitation. It was a great discussion.
Valerie Stoll, Faculty Associate, UW-Madison, with Mighty May Walraven, General Manager of InnovaFeed North America. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.